Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, as well as listen to podcasts from prior shows. Welcome to the show. Today is June 21st, 2017. The markets were flat today. The Dow closing at 21,410, the NASDAQ at 6233, and the S&P at 2435. Our topic tonight, losing asset value outside of the market. What do I mean by that? Well, we're going to talk about it. We are live tonight. We'll take your calls, your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. She'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. Email was also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So what do I mean when I say the topic is losing asset value outside of the market? Well, people seem to pay quite a bit of attention to the market and how it might be impacting their portfolio. They worry about losing money in the market. First, if you're invested in the market, understand that the market does go up and down. I always like to remind people of that. Sorry, I think it's so funny because it's always breaking news, you know, breaking news. Anyway, but just because it goes down today does not mean that you've lost money. If you sell and lock in those losses, then you might be able to say that you lost some money that you would have had otherwise. But even then, you may not have technically lost money. And that's also another concept that people don't always grasp. So, for example, if you invested $10,000 and over time that account goes up to $18,000 and then the market drops, causing your account to go down to $16,000, people will sometimes say, oh, I lost money. Well, if you sell, you might think you lost $2,000. But you have to remember that you invested $10,000. So you actually have a gain of $6,000 in that scenario. So it's always interesting to me when people think they've lost money in the market. Sometimes people do. I'm not discounting that, but it's the perspective from which they say such things that bears kind of a review from time to time. All right. So just be, watchful of those kinds of terms. But what has struck me is that quite often that is what people are focusing on. And quite often when we're invested in the market, it's through retirement accounts or our savings, you know, brokerage accounts, we're doing a good job saving money and we're paying attention to the market going up and down, but maybe we're not doing anything with our portfolio. We're just kind of watching it and knowing maybe we're in it for the long term. But there are so many other pieces of our financial life that we're not paying attention to that could also be losing value and losing assets for us. When we're not paying attention, whether it's a drop in the market or it's us not taking advantage of accumulating some asset or taking care of some asset, aren't we then too losing some value in those assets? So that's what I want to talk about tonight. Where else might you lose asset value? And big picture, I'm going to talk about, I just want to make a note of one thing I want to add to my list before I get too far. What we're talking about is bad pension options. We could lose some asset value if we make some uninformed pension options. Failure to take advantage of NUA options in a 401k plan or ESOP. You say, what is NUA? That's net unrealized appreciation. That's for folks who have employer stock in their plan at work. And we have several companies in the Valley who do have that. So it may apply to you if you've, if you're aware that you have employer stock in your plans. And the reason I mention both of those is because they have been coming up quite frequently in conversations that I've had with clients recently. So I thought I should talk about it because it could be a relevant matter to many of our listeners. Three, failure to take advantage of employer benefits such as company match on a retirement account or using a flexible spending account. I want to talk about losing asset value when people make financial decisions that might impact their taxes without appropriate tax planning, or maybe they're taking money out of early out of retirement accounts or out of annuities, and then they're faced with early withdrawal penalties or surrender charges. Not understanding the cost of your investments, inadequate maintenance on property such as your home or auto, which could impact your asset value. And the last thing I wanted to add to that list was portfolio rebalancing. Since I started with saying everybody's just paying attention to their portfolios and their asset values and not worrying about all these other pieces of their financial life, it reminded me that if we're not looking at our retirement accounts or those investments periodically, we could be losing money as well if we're not taking advantage of diversification, asset allocation, and proper rebalancing. So I'm going to start by talking about pension options. And when we talk about losing asset value, it's talking about maybe a bad pension decision. Granted, anytime we have options before us, what really has to happen if we're taking care of business is we want to make sure that we make the most informed decision that we have in front of us at the time. So we want to make the most informed decision we can with the information that we have available at that time. Now, granted, sometimes hindsight, as they say, is 20/20. Maybe 2 years down the line, you say, oh, shoot, I wish I would have done ABC instead of XYZ. That's why it's very, very important to make sure that you're making the best decision for you at that time. And then you have to be willing to accept it. It's like when you go to buy a house and you think you're getting a great deal and it's $150,000 and, you know, 4 months later, the house next door sells for, you know, $120,000 and you think, shoot, we should have waited. Maybe that was a better deal. Well, if $150,000 was a good deal at the time you made your decision, then you just have to accept that and go along with it. If the most important thing is that it was the best decision for you at that time. So you have to be willing and able to live with your decisions. So I'm going to talk about pension options and what kind of pension options might be available to you that could go awry if you're not paying attention. And I'll do that when I come back from the break. But if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking tonight about losing asset value outside of the market and some various ways that could happen. The first one I'm going to talk about is, I don't know if I'm going to call it bad pension options. I'm just saying maybe pension options that weren't thought through. Let me first give a little primer on pensions, and then we'll talk about where we could see little hiccups. So first of all, a pension, we're seeing those go by the wayside. Many, many companies that used to provide those no longer do. They've either don't continue them for new hires, or they freeze them for people, you know, or they give employees the option to freeze them at some point. So we're not seeing pensions the way we used to. And when I talk about a pension, it's a defined benefit, meaning when I retire, I'm going to get a monthly benefit of, you know, $1,000 a month for the rest of my life. So that is like a defined benefit. What has happened, though, over time is the typical kind of pension options that we were used to seeing might be a single life option. So if I have worked for my employer and they're going to provide this great benefit for me, if I work X number of years and I retire at X date, I'm going to get some calculated amount that's going to be so much per month. And that's over my life because that's what I've earned. But hey, you know, if over my life and I died the next day, you know, where was that great benefit that employer provided for me? Because it's going to be gone if I just do a pension option over my life. If I have a surviving spouse, I might want to take care of them. So the employer plans typically would say you have a single life option. That means it's just over your life expectancy and your lifetime. And then when you die, it's done. We could have a survivor option where the pension plan will pay the participant a lower amount, not the single life amount, a little bit lower amount, because we're going to also provide for the surviving spouse. So maybe I was going to get $1,000 a month for my single life, but now I want to provide a benefit to my spouse, and I want my spouse to get, you know, the same benefit that I'm getting. Well, now they're not going to give me $1,000. Maybe they're going to give me $800. I'm just making up these numbers. And then if I die the next day, my surviving spouse is going to continue getting $800 a month. That's a joint with 100% survivor benefit. But hey, you know, my spouse might not need that much, and I'd like a little bit more in my paycheck. Well, the employer, the pension plan may give you an option to give a 50% survivor option to your spouse. Maybe your spouse is only going to need half that money. So instead of $800, I'm going to increase it a little bit. Now I'm going to get $900 during my life. And my surviving spouse is only going to get 50% of that benefit. They're going to get $450 a month. All right, that's called the joint with 50% survivor benefit. Sometimes they'll let you paste on a term certain. And a term certain is when you say, okay, employer pension plan, I would like this benefit. I really think I only want it over my lifetime. But, you know, that's a risk if something happens to me. I'm worried that, you know, I've built up this asset, this wonderful pension asset. There's a value to that. Over time, if we did a present value of the future stream of income, meaning all those future checks, if I added those up and said, what are they worth today? What pot of money do we need today to pay that future stream of money? Let's pretend it's worth $400,000. So one of the options is could be this term certain. So, hey, Lori, we're not going to pay you $1,000. We're not going to pay you $900. We're not going to pay you $800 for those survivor benefits and or the $1,000 for the single life. We're going to pay you $950 a month and with a term certain. And that term certain might be 10 years. It might be 15 years. And what that says is if I haven't depleted my bucket, my $400,000 bucket of the $950 a month for as many years as I live, if I haven't depleted it before I die, then the balance or the pension amount will continue for that term certain so that bucket in essence gets paid out. if I die, you know, if it's a 15-year term certain and I die in year 16, it's gone, poof, done. All right. So there's all these options, single life, joint and survivor benefits, maybe a term certain. It depends on the pension plan as to which options you're going to get. So here's the thing that I don't want people to forget about. If you're only thinking in the moment and you look at your pension options and you say, boy, I could get $1,000 a month. That looks better than $800 a month. That's $200. And I'm making up these numbers again. That's better than that other, $800 a month. I'm going to take the higher amount. I want that money today. Well, if you don't think it through and you end up passing away prematurely, then that asset that you just built up, working all of those years that you feel you've earned, it's poof, gone. And that's the part I don't like seeing. So one of the things that I suggest people go through is we have a pension decision tree where we go through and we talk about what is the life expectancy. You know, we all have a life expectancy based on an IRS table, but that doesn't mean that's each of our life expectancies. Some of us look at the history of our own families, our own parents, and our own health. So your life expectancy may be very different than what those tables would say. You want to look at your income needs. Do you need that monthly amount today? Or might you have some big expenditures that are coming up that it's going to mean that you have to, you know, sell your house in order to take care of, I don't know what, some big goal you have. Maybe it would make sense to have that lump sum amount. You'd have to see how that's going to work for you. You want to look at your heirs' needs. Do you have loved ones who are counting on your money if something happens to you today? Investment risk. Are you risk adverse? Do you like the idea of a monthly pension amount? So you have to kind of go through all these questions. Tax exposure. A lump sum from a pension can be rolled over into an IRA. And you wouldn't have to take any distributions out of it until you're age 70 and a half. Typically, if you're taking a pension, you might start that pension when you're 55, 60, 70, or 65, depending on when you retired and your years of service and all of that. You may have the pension now, which means you're going to be paying taxes on it now. Maybe you don't need the money. So you want to look at your tax exposure, inflation growth. How do you think inflation is going to impact this? Is inflation going to keep up with that monthly pension that you're going to get? Because typically, we don't see cost of living adjustments. It's kind of flat. So if you're not getting cost of living adjustments, what's going to happen as inflation occurs and cost of goods go up? We also need to look at the credit risk of the pension plan itself. Just coming over here tonight on the radio, I heard that there was a pension plan that's getting investigated, and I didn't hear all the details of it. I just thought, whoops, FBI's involved. So do we need to worry about the credit risk of the pension plan, whether it's going to be, there when you need it. So there's all these different factors to consider. And once you kind of go down those, it kind of starts to help to formulate your decision. So you have to go through that. Folks, I got a question. Let me see if I can answer this before we go to our break. And then I can come back from the break and talk more about the pensions. Bill from Easton called. He said, what are the parameters for giving money away if you think you will die in a year or two? Will your estate or the gifted person be penalized? Hey, Bill, great question. Hope it's not you. What happens is, for federal purposes, if you have a federal estate, you can gift whenever. There's a federal exemption. I think it's $5.49 million now. So if you're not talking about that, I'm not going to worry. The annual gift amount you can make without having to file any tax returns or report anything is $14,000 that you can give to any person. If you give more than $14,000, then the IRS wants you to file a gift tax return, and it starts eating away at that federal exemption. For Pennsylvania purposes, for inheritance purposes, they will look back 1 year. So if you made a gift to someone for $14,000, Pennsylvania will look back 1 year, and they give you an exclusion of $3,000. So for Pennsylvania inheritance tax purposes, they look at any transfers within a year, and those come back in. When you said, will your estate or the gifted person be penalized? No, there might be inheritance tax on some of those transfers made within a year. And depending on what your will says or your estate says, who pays the inheritance tax on that amount would be determined by your will, your executor, the attorneys working with you. So if your will says, you know, all inheritance tax are deemed to be like a debt out of my estate and paid out of my estate, then if those transfers were included on the inheritance tax return subject to inheritance tax based on who was getting the money, then the estate would pay it. If it is silent to that or doesn't address it or says, you know, the beneficiaries receiving, you know, non-probate priority property have to pay their own inheritance taxes, then the person receiving it might have to pay the inheritance tax. But I wouldn't, that's not a penalty. That's just kind of the inheritance tax on transfers within a year. So you have, it would look back 1 year for inheritance tax purposes. I hope that answered your question. If you need more details, please just give us a call back. The number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and this is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about losing asset value outside of the market. Bill, thanks for your call. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. I'm kind of going over some issues around pensions and how we can lose asset value. So, you know, if I gave you an example of a future stream of money that we do a present value and we say this pension has an asset value to you of, you know, maybe $200,000. If you choose the single life with no other options because you want that higher monthly amount and you pass away the next day, that lump sum, that is gone. So that's where you have to really consider, are there people you have to take care of? Are there heirs? Even if there aren't heirs, sometimes I just hate the thought of that money just going poof. I mean, I'd rather it go to a charity or someone, something like that. So you want to really think through those pension options. If you have survivor benefits, at least your survivor is going to get some benefit. If you both perish, if you have a husband and wife and you both perish the next day, then that too is gone, you see. So you want to make sure you're looking through everything. The issue with taking a lump sum, though, is now the onus of making that money last and providing you some ongoing future stream of income, if indeed you need it, is that now you have to invest that lump sum amount. And are you going to invest it in such a way that it would still provide you with that same kind of benefit that you would have received had you chosen the monthly pension amount? So we call that a hurdle rate. It depends on your life expectancy and what kind of rates of return you can get on your money. But can your lump sum earn as much or more enough to give you what would have been the equivalent of that monthly amount? So that requires a little extra analysis, but those are the kinds of things you need to do. Sit down and think about it. There are a lot of teachers who have pensions where they have made contributions to them in the Pennsylvania system, PEESRs. Teachers who've made contributions into the system, when they go to retire, PEESR says, hey, here are your pension options. You can take a single life, you can take a term certain, you can have these survivor benefits, and here are the amounts. And that's based on a full pension balance. But then they also say, but hey, part of this full pension balance also includes contributions that you made to the plan. And hey, teachers, you can take out your contributions. When you take out your contributions, you roll those over to an IRA. Remember, I mentioned that with the lump sum. You roll the lump sums into an IRA. That way it's not taxable today. It's only taxable when you start taking the money out. But teachers can take out their employee contributions. Sometimes that gives you a little bit more control. And then they still have a pension piece to it. And then, again, they have those options of single life, survivor benefits, term certain. Air Products still has pensions. PPL still has pensions. So there are still a number of people out there who have pensions that really need to review their options and make sure they understand all the implications and tax consequences. So, for example, the pension, if you take the pension, you get that monthly amount, which, again, it could be very valid and good for a lot of people. You have to make that decision based on your own circumstances. But for folks who roll it over to an IRA, sometimes that gives you additional tax planning opportunities and options with converting to Roth IRAs and things like that, naming beneficiaries, multiple beneficiaries, that type of thing. Let me move on to talking about the failure to take advantage of net unrealized appreciation. What I mean by that is there, again, a number of companies, Air Products and PPL in particular, who have employer stock in their 401k plans. PPL used to have a separate ESOP plan. When there's employer stock in a retirement plan, and you're going to retire, maybe you're retiring, you're separating from service, you've reached age 59 and a half. These are called triggering events. You have the option to take the employer stock out of the plan, like as a distribution. But you know, normally when you take money out of a retirement account, I've told you it's ordinary income taxable, right? When you take money out of a regular retirement account, whether 401k, 403b, if it's not the Roth feature, it's the good old-fashioned saving money in the retirement account. When you take it out or roll it over into an IRA and take out distributions, it's ordinary income, taxed at ordinary income tax rates. Well, if there's employer stock in a plan, the IRS has special rules for that. You can actually take the employer stock out. It has to be in something called a lump sum distribution. I'll explain that in a minute. You take the employer stock out of the plan and put it in a separate individual brokerage account or maybe a joint brokerage account. You're literally taking it out of the retirement plan. And the IRS only taxes you on the cost basis. So I have a recent example where someone had employer stock in a plan. The cost basis of the stock is $58,000, and the fair market value of that stock is $400,000. If he were to do a lump sum distribution and take the employer stock out, he's paying tax today, ordinary income tax, on the cost basis of that stock at $58,000. He puts $400,000 worth of employer stock into a brokerage account. The difference between the $400,000 and the cost basis, I'm going to call it $60,000 because it's just easier, $400,000 fair market value, $60,000 cost basis, that's $340,000 of appreciation in that employer stock that's been sitting there for years in that plan. I don't have to pay tax on that today if I don't cash out the stock. I'm only paying tax on my $60,000 of cost basis. Now, it so happens that there was another $400,000 of mutual funds in the same 401k. The IRS says within the same calendar year, you have to roll over the whole 401k. So he rolls the $400,000 of mutual funds into an IRA rollover, and he actually takes a distribution of the employer stock into a brokerage account. That's a lump sum distribution, not the whole thing rolled over. I have to clarify. It was a lump sum distribution all within a calendar year. So, lots and lots of income tax implications on that. And I'm going to talk to you when I come back from the next break how we apply losing asset value if you're not taking advantage of these things. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
I have a question for you, Lori.
Okay.
Have you heard of WDIY's second annual Homebrew Fest?
I haven't. I was there last year.
Whoa. All right. And fun stuff, huh?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yes. Yeah. Tasting different beers. This is going to be on Saturday, July 8th at the Ice House in Bethlehem from 2 to 5 p.m. And we're asking listeners to support us and get your tickets today at WDIY.org. And Lori and I thank you.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
The time is 6:31. You are listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert on WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Current temperature is 77 degrees. Tonight, a low of 60. Tomorrow, Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 86. And Thursday night, a 20% chance of showers, low around 69. For Friday, both day and night, a 60% chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm. Mostly cloudy in the day with a high near 85 and Friday's low 68 degrees. Saturday partly sunny with a high near 83 and Saturday night a low of 62 degrees. Back to your financial choices, and here is Lori Siebert.
Thank you very much, John. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So we're talking about losing asset value outside of the market. I mentioned earlier about making wise pension elections for your own facts and circumstances, and moved on to talking about employer stock in your retirement plans, your 401ks or ESOP plans, employee stock ownership plans, and how if you are not familiar with this and you have it, get familiar with it. It is very, very important. My example earlier, $60,000 of employer stock worth $400,000 today. If they follow all the correct rules around doing a lump sum distribution, and you want to make sure you do everything right, be very, very careful. It could make such a huge difference. And what do I mean by that? If they kept the employer stock in the plan. Recall that I said it was $400,000 of mutual funds and $400,000 of employer stock. If they, if this participant took the whole $800,000 and rolled it over to an IRA, they would have required minimum distributions every year, and it would be all ordinary income. Any growth on it, ordinary income, eventual, RMDs, inherited amounts, all ordinary income. If instead it is taken out, the employer stock, so now we have a $400,000 rollover IRA and we have $400,000 in a brokerage account. That $400,000 IRA will also have required minimum distributions on it. It's going to be half the amount if we had kept the stock in the plan, right? So now we've just given ourselves a little bit of room for tax planning purposes. We've lowered the required minimum distribution, especially if we don't need it, because the required minimum distribution is based on the December 31st value of the IRA. So in my one situation, I had an $800,000 IRA. The required minimum distribution on that is based on the $800,000. In my second scenario, where I took the employer stock out, the IRA is only $400,000. Remember, it's just a minimum required distribution. So if you ever needed more, you could take out more out of the IRA, but at least it's a smaller amount, and maybe that gives me more flexibility in my tax situation. Now, in that circumstance, then, I have a lower required minimum distribution, but I have this $400,000 account sitting over here with employer stock in it that has a cost basis of $60,000. And you say, well, Lori, now what if I sell this employer stock? I'm going to have these huge capital gains. Well, capital gains at 15%, even on that appreciation, is about $51,000. And that's if you sold the whole thing. You wouldn't have to sell the whole thing. You could feather it out over time. You always want to pay attention to whether it's still a good investment for you and whatnot. But If we sold the whole thing, we had $340,000 of gains at 15%, I think was $51,000. If I had taken that same $400,000 out of my IRA, and granted, I'm not suggesting that, nor would I advise it or do it probably, but $400,000 at pretend, it's not even going to be 25% if I took out the whole thing, but over time, $400,000 times 25% is $100,000 if the incremental amounts are that. We wouldn't do it all at once, but the $360,000 at 15% is $54,000, and the $60,000 at 25%, because remember, we've got to pay ordinary income tax on the cost basis of $60,000. So that's $15,000. So that still looks like a pretty good deal to me compared to what I would pay if it was all ordinary income. Now, again, over time, you run projections, you kind of got to see where people are with tax brackets and that kind of thing. It's worth investigating. So just check it out. Cost basis of employer stock, fair market value of the stock, understand your rollover options have to be within the calendar year, lump sum distribution options, I'm going to clarify that again, and then understanding the income tax attributes. All right, so we're talking about losing asset value outside of the market. What else can we talk about? Failure to get the employer match at work. This is a big one. Failure to get the employer match at work. What am I talking about? If you have a retirement plan at work and your employer says they will match your contribution up to some amount, typically if, let's say, you put in 6% of your pay into the 401k retirement plan, some employers might say we'll match half of it up to 6%. So if you do 6, maybe they'll do 3. Sometimes employers will say we'll match 100% up to a particular percent. Maybe they say we'll give 100%, we'll match you up to 4%. So then if you put in 4, they'll put in 4. Sometimes they'll say we'll match the first 3 and then half on the next 3, which means they're going to match 4.5% on 6%. You need to talk to your employer about this when you're getting hired. That is part of the process of comparing apples to apples when you're doing a job search and making a decision on where you want to go work. You want to understand what the employer benefits are, and one of those are retirement plan accounts and whether or not they're matching. Some employers have safe harbor plans and they're going to put the money in anyway, so that's always good. But it you should also then put in money as long as your cash flow allows. We don't want you to run up big credit cards so you can put money in your 401k. You want to do it as all part of a planned, organized financial goal setting exercise. So please do that. But not getting an employer match when it's available is losing asset value because you're not building up your retirement account with that free money. And you're also losing the further appreciation on it over time when you are investing the money. So you're losing the employer match, free money, and you're losing the earnings growth potential on that contribution over time. And it could be quite significant. Recall the example I gave earlier with the net unrealized appreciation. Quite often, employers who have employer stock in their plans will do the match with the employer stock. So remember I said in this story, the gentleman had $60,000 of employer stock cost basis and the value was $400,000. Not that they all go that way, but that was some appreciation on that. So when you're not taking advantage of employer match, you're losing out on appreciation from whatever investments you may select for yourself or that are available in an employer plan. Another asset that is available, asset saving thing that's available through work, through employer plans, is the flexible spending account. And what when we talk about losing asset value there, if you have to pay $2,500 in medical expenses out of your bank account. That is with what we call after-tax money. So you might have had to earn $3,000 to get a net paycheck of $2,500. You put the $2,500 in your bank account, and then you have to write a bill for your medical expenses of $2,500. But see, it cost you like $3,000 because it's after-tax money. If instead you have through work an employer flexible spending account, and usually you have to opt in for these during open enrollment, which is typically in the fall for many employers, the flexible spending account says that we can take money out of our paycheck and put it into a special account. We're not going to pay tax on that. We get like a, it's like a pre-tax deduction. So if I earn, let's pretend I only earn $2,500, and normally I would be paying federal tax, PA tax, local tax, Medicare tax, and all of that on that $2,500. In this case, it's pre-tax, and it's not going to be subject to federal tax or state or local. Flexible spending accounts, it's not subject to, for health expenses, it's not subject to those taxes. So you're saving that. So you're actually building up the assets in your bank account if you're using a flexible spending account. The issue with flexible spending, which scares people sometimes, is it's a use it or lose it. So there's another place to lose asset value if you do have a flexible spending account and you maybe didn't estimate properly your medical expenses. If you don't have medical expenses to validate what you've put aside, then you may leave assets on the table. So number one, you want to do it to save on the pre-tax side of it. Number two, you want to make sure you actually use it. I found it very useful during the period when my children were having braces, because the dental insurance doesn't cover all the cost of braces. And back then, we could even do higher amounts with the flexible spending account for healthcare expenses. So we maxed it out during those years because we absolutely knew not in a million years were we ever going to use it all when we were paying out the money that we were for braces. So you want to think about what you're doing. The other thing we sometimes do is we will say, okay, everybody's getting glasses this year, and then the contacts and the crowns, and try to make sure you do all those big medical expenses in the year where you've set up the flexible spending and maxed it. So you have to kind of estimate. You don't have to do the whole amount. If you think your medical expenses are only $500, it's still worth it. So you want to find out if at work you have a flexible spending account and estimate how much you think you should put in. You can also have a change in circumstance, which they may let you adjust during the year, but generally they don't let you adjust it. They also have a flexible spending account for dependent care. So the health savings, the flexible spending account for health care is $2,600 for 2017. But for dependent care expenses on a pre-tax basis, $5,000. That is huge. Let me add one other. So you're saving lots of income tax on $5,000, because we know child care costs a lot of money. And $5,000 on a pre-tax basis is lots of tax savings. The other thing to keep in mind if you have more than one child too is sometimes the flexible spending account isn't even enough to cover all the care cost. So there is actually an extra deduction you can get on your tax return, depending on how many kids you have and how much you pay in child care cost, above and beyond the flexible spending account. And that's called the child care credit, the child and dependent care credit, and that's form 2441. So you want to make sure you check that out. When we come back, we have the last part of the show. We're going to talk about realizing tax and penalties on financial decisions, such as early withdrawals, surrender charges, other ways you can lose asset value if you're not paying attention. Folks, if you have questions, I'm here. It's a beautiful night, I know, but if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution, on the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Attention beer lovers, WDIY's Homebrew Fest is back, featuring an afternoon of beer tasting and music with over 30 handcrafted beers from the Lehigh Valley's best homebrewers. Saturday, July 8th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Ice House in Bethlehem. Discounted early bird tickets are available now for a limited time. Get your tickets today at WDIY.org. Cheers.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We're in the last quarter of the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. I wonder if there's any listeners out there who are thinking, yeah, I have that. I'll have to check that later. Guilt. Anybody remember Irma Bombeck? Oh, yes. Irma Bombeck, I think she wrote a book. What was it? Life isn't nothing but a bowl of cherries. But Irma Bombeck said, good Catholic guilt can go a long way. So I'm just putting it out to folks. Make sure you're being proactive in your financial decisions. And if any of this applies to you, make sure that you're taking care of business and checking out what you need to. Let's talk for a minute about other ways to lose asset value. Realizing tax and penalties on some of your financial decisions. I had someone who was, taking money out of retirement account. I don't want to give too much away. Taking money out of retirement accounts early. Early means pre-age 59 and a half, still working and taking money out of retirement accounts. Pre-age 59 and a half, what does that mean? Well, it means you're going to have income tax consequences on taking the money out because it's ordinary income tax rates, and that doesn't matter what age you are if you're taking money out of regular retirement accounts or IRAs. Again, I'm not talking about Roth IRAs, I'm talking about regular IRAs. Or 401ks or 403bs, you're taking money out, it has ordinary income tax on it. That's not as big of an issue, except that, number one, that when we deplete those accounts earlier than when we retire, we have also now removed the ability to have compounding on that money. That's losing asset value, that compounding factor. We've reduced our assets by the amount of income taxes that we've had to pay. And again, we're doing it earlier than we should have been in our working years, quite possibly. I've seen people take money out while they're still working because they're using the money for purposes that they probably shouldn't be using money for. They need to change your habits. And so now they've reduced the ability for their account to have the compounding. They've reduced their account by the taxes as well, their overall assets. They actually wasted the money, so it didn't go to a better use. And not only that, they also have a 10% penalty. 10% penalty for federal purposes. If you're in a 25% tax bracket and you also have a 10% penalty, that's 35% in taxes right there. And what some people don't realize is when you take money out, now you've increased your income on your tax return, it could impact other pieces of your tax return. It might make more of your Social Security taxable if you're collecting Social Security. It might make your adjusted gross income, well, it will make your adjusted gross income go up, which may limit other deductions that you might get. All of a sudden, you might not be able to get that American Opportunity Credit or those tuition deductions, or maybe now the limitations on certain itemized deductions on Schedule A, maybe you phased out now because you put that extra income on your tax return. This is why you have to take some time to understand that one decision you make can impact the next one and the next one and the next one, like dominoes. The other factor is in Pennsylvania, as Pennsylvania residents, you take money out of your retirement account early, it could be subject to Pennsylvania income tax. And for people who know Pennsylvania rules, we know that Pennsylvania doesn't tax retirement accounts, right? Well, if we take money out of our retirement accounts early, Pennsylvania says, to the extent it is above your contributions to that plan, we are going to tax you. So if I put $10,000 into a 401k, we get a deduction on federal. We don't get a deduction on Pennsylvania. We pay the tax on it when we put it in. That's why when we retire, they're not going to tax us. But let's say it's 10 years down the line, and that $10,000 has grown to $14,000. 10 years down the line. So we had put in $10,000, and now it's $14,000, and I decide to take it all out and go do something bad with it. So I take $14,000 out. I pay ordinary income taxes on federal. I pay a 10% penalty on federal. And now Pennsylvania, remember? Yeah, they don't tax our retirement. But I also said, did we take out more? When we're taking out early distributions of our retirement accounts, Pennsylvania says, we're going to give you a break on what you originally put in, but we're going to tax you on the earnings. So in my story here, I put in 10, it's worth 14, I take out 14. Now I'm going to pay tax on Pennsylvania of $4,000 that had I waited until I retired, I would not have had this tax. All right? Now here's the kicker. You have to prove that you put the $10,000 in. How many of you in Pennsylvania are keeping track of what your basis is in your 401k? Because we don't think about it, because we don't think we have to, because we know retirement benefits aren't taxable in Pennsylvania. So it confuses people. Then they can't prove it. Then they end up saying, well, what the heck, we can't prove it. We're just going to tax the whole thing. That's a win for Pennsylvania. And now you're taxing maybe the whole $14,000 instead of just the four. These are the little things you have to pay attention to. That was just one example. Sometimes people take money out early out of annuities and their surrender charges. One of the reasons there's surrender charges is because when you bought that annuity, a big commission went to the person who, a possible commission, went to the person who sold it to you. Well, so those surrender charges in some part are trying to recover that commission that the annuity company sold and paid to that advisor who sold that annuity. So you got to be careful of surrender charges. Know when you got your annuity or, investment, because even investments have the same thing. If there were certain share classes that pay an advisor some money and you get out too soon, there's something called deferred sales charges. You want to watch for that. Pay attention. Keep it on your radar. We have a call. We have Jean from Easton on line one. Jean, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hello.
Hi. Good. Hi. How can I help you?
Yeah. I got a question about, I have a solo 401k that I have from a business, and right now I want to take a loan out against that, and I understand I can take up to $50,000 out as long as I've got $50,000 additional in there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my first question about that is that just like a snapshot? Like, you've got to have that to set the loan up. But after that, I mean, you could be investing money. Maybe you'd have less than that, and that's okay, right?
Well, first of all, I'm familiar with when we have employer plans. There are something called the summary plan description that will describe the loan availability and how much you can take out. If it's up to $50,000, they'll talk about also your balance. Typically, we see where you can't take out more than half your balance. So if you had an employer plan, for example, of $100,000, they might have in their plan description that an employee could take out a $50,000 loan if it's not more than half. And then there's interest that you'd have to pay and a loan application that you'd have to pay. As far as a solo 401k, Gene, where you have a sole proprietor who has set up their own 401k plan, typically those are prototype plans. You want to look at the plan document for that. There should be one, and see if the same kind of provisions apply. I actually have never had someone who has a solo 401k ask to borrow from it, so I've never had to read the fine print, but of a particular prototype plan for a solo 401k, it might be at Charles Schwab, it might be at Vanguard, wherever you set it up, there should have been plan provisions, and I don't know if you've already read them, But what might apply to a solo 401k might be very different than what would apply to an employer plan. Here's the thing.
Right.
If you borrow from the solo, if it's available, number one, and then you borrow from it, there are typically interest that you have to pay back, and then you'd have to pay back. The reason I'm concerned that you wouldn't be able to do it with a solo 401k is because when we have an employer plan, the loan is set up and the amount comes out directly out of our paychecks every month or week or whatever the payroll period is. Solo 401ks don't operate that way. So I would really be surprised if you could actually borrow from a solo 401k.
Okay, well, I have checked it out, and it looks like I can, and it also looks like I can set the interest rate, and as long as I set the interest rate at something that seems reasonable to me, then, even if it's 1%, that's fine, because that's, about what I'd be getting from a bank right now.
Okay.
So it's kind of a strange situation, and I'm going to have fun with it, but if you like, I could maybe try to let you know how it turns out.
That would be great. Now, Gene, did they caution you, though, if perhaps you don't have income, you're going to be paying that back out of your own personal funds anyway, but if at some point you no longer have money in the business, do they force you to pay that back? Because if I have an employer plan and I leave work, they will make you pay it back or treat it as a distribution. So you want to make sure you understand that.
Right. And I guess it's still the same kind of thing, that if I don't pay it back, if somehow I renege on myself,
it'll be a distribution.
It would be considered a distribution, and I would owe federal taxes on the money right away, which I'm trying to put off for now. And, so I think it all will work out.
Are you 59 and a half, Gene?
I'm 60.
Perfect. Okay, so at least you don't have the 10% penalty then. So that makes me feel a little bit better about it.
It's only really like $175 a month for, 50 grand. So it's not a huge amount of money. I should definitely be able to handle it.
Okay.
Well, okay.
Good luck.
Good talking to you.
All right. Thanks for the info. I appreciate it. Have a good night.
Sure. You too. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. It's one of the best benefits of doing this radio show is when we have callers who call in and share something I have not had before, because there are situations I have not had before, and I love doing research, but if I've not had the situation, I'm not necessarily putting some of this to my mind. So I appreciate Gene calling and sharing that. It's good to know. And again, I think it's always checking it out and doing your homework before you move forward. I think that's always a good call. Folks, we're almost out of time. I did want to mention also understanding the cost of your investments. I had just gotten some information off of Morningstar.com talking about expense ratios and making sure that you also understand what they are. When you're looking at funds and investing, you want to look for lower cost expenses. The caution was, though, sometimes the lower cost funds are maybe, like a large cap fund, which might not require as much research as a small cap fund or some kind of very specialty fund. The costs are going to be higher on some of those smaller kinds of funds. So if you only look at the cost, the expense ratios of a fund, that might not let you have a complete picture as far as your fund options and your diversification, because asset allocation actually is more important than picking any specific fund or stock. Asset allocation is key. So be careful when you're paying attention to the expense ratios on funds. That's not the whole picture, and you have to look at returns as well. Well, tonight's show went very fast. I started off very tired tonight, and it went very fast. And I thank the callers who called in. It always makes the show so much more fun, and I appreciate when you do call in. If you ever have questions and you need to email, that can go through yourfinancialchoices.com. If there's something we didn't cover on the show or something you want covered, I love ideas and hearing what listeners want to know more about. Next week, I thought, well, it's almost summertime. We're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk about spending over the summer, vacations, and other ways to lose track. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank John and Lori both for being here and our callers, Gene and Bill. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.
And you too, Lori, and a happy summer. And our first day of summer 2017. This concludes Lori Siebert and Your Financial Choices. Every Wednesday here on WDIY from 6 to 7 p.m. You will listen. If you listen, you will learn a lot. It's time now to move on to music and In the Tradition with Tom Druckenmiller. He's going to be here in just a few minutes after we hear from NPR News. This is WDIY Allentown.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Former Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson is defending the Obama administration's response to Russian hacking efforts. As NPR's Scott Detrow reports from the Capitol, Johnson says election interference was a front-burner issue for him in 2016. Johnson appeared before the House Intelligence Committee.
Lawmakers from both parties grilled